This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 24, Attacking Club Cricket. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about attacking cricket, the way that England and New Zealand play, and what lessons you can take for your club and your school cricket. And we help some listeners with their problems. Bonga's back, and he's talking about taking wickets. And we also help someone who's worried about getting out LBW and wants to improve his back foot game. Listen in to this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show to find out if we can help. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This, of course, as you know by now, is your guide to better cricket, whether that's coaching, whether that's playing, or whatever else in the world you want to be doing to improve your game. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And joining me, as they always do, are two cricket coaches who can help you improve your game. The first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
How are you? All right? All good?
Excellent, thank you. Yes, enjoying an unprecedented dry spell and cricket every day, which is exactly how I like it.
It doesn't get a lot better than that, does it? Especially in Scotland.
Well, precisely. You know, another 2020 tonight, so we're firing on all cylinders at the moment. And speaking of firing on all cylinders, the other coach on the line from Portsmouth Grammar School, it's a cricket professional there, it's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
Right, let's get cracking on with the show, because we're on a bit of a tight schedule today, but we're still going to get in half an hour of goodness, I hope. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea that's been floating around the English cricket team at the moment, which is more attacking cricket and the way England have been approaching their cricket since the World Cup. And it's been interesting to me to hear the language that people have been using, purely because playing more attacking cricket is one of those phrases that is as old as cricket, I think. You could probably trace it back to the 1920s of sides saying we're going to play a more sprightly cricket or something like that. So that's always an aim of teams, to be more attacking and score more quickly. But it does seem to be in recent times that it has gone up another notch. So because these things have gone up another notch, is there lessons here for lower levels of the game where that notch can be pushed up again in club and school cricket?
Well, I think the answer is yes. And really what's changed mostly is mindset, isn't it? That's the thing that Paul Farbrace has been trying to manage within the England side, and Mike Hessen has succeeded already and done it for a while with the New Zealand side. So I think in terms of mindset, I think it's really important. The other thing that I think is really important is the language that we use around trying to change mindset as well. And I've talked about that a lot in the past, but it's something that I'm sure that both Farby and Mike have got right, and Brendan McCullum's got right, and Owen Morgan's got right when they're talking with the team. Because in England's case, to make such a fundamental change in the way that they've gone about their batting over the course of the last three games is massive from where they were not too far ago, you know, back in the World Cup. And, you know, to change that, you've got to get your language right as well as your practice. Because to change mindset is more about the language, the communication, the clarity of the plan, the commitment to the plan. And that was the thing in the third one-day international that got me very excited, is despite the fact that they lost wickets and ultimately lost a game as a result, they kept going. And they've got to do that, and they've got to fail a few times in order for there to be a long-term change in the way that they go about it. So I was really encouraged by that, and I was really encouraged by Farby's words post-game and in the last couple of days about the way that he's talking to the team. So, yes, there are lessons, because we can change our language and change our behaviours. The only thing I would just be slightly wary on is obviously the surfaces that we're playing on in club cricket aren't always as conducive to hit off in the same consistent way that they are in many of the international games, and certainly these pitches that we've seen in this series so far. The thing that is beginning to change is that for many of us in club cricket, the size of the boundaries at international level are becoming more consistent with club cricket ground sizes. So there's a level playing field, but certainly just be wary of the pitches that you're playing on, because international one day international pitches are phenomenal batting wickets generally.
And that's one of the common arguments I hear in club cricket about improving the scoring rate and scoring more runs in the 50 overs that you're batting for, or whatever the length of time is that people say, well, the pitches aren't as good, so, you know, we can't do that. We have to do it in the way that we do it, because, you know, we don't want to get bundled out for 100 trying to score 300. So is that, do you think, labours a mindset thing as well, or is there a genuine argument there to be had that, you know, you have to sort of ignore the way that professional cricket's played because of the pitches?
Yeah, I think you've got to be aware that the pitches are different and the conditions are different, but I think you should still be taking on board that that you're now starting to look at a group of cricketers or groups of cricketers around the world on the telly who are literally trying to squeeze out every single opportunity from a 50-over innings or a 20-over innings or however many it could be. And it doesn't mean that we can't take a leaf out of their book and actually look at whether or not we're actually squeezing as much as we can out of an innings. And I think that's something that we're starting to do more and more in international cricket, is you'll see that they're really trying to maximise every delivery. And in their case, with the quality of the bats they've got, the surfaces they're playing on, the boundaries getting a little bit smaller, as Gareth suggested beforehand, then maximising every ball can be done by hitting boundaries almost every ball, or trying to do that. In club cricket, that might be slightly different. But are we still maximising every delivery as batsmen? Are we? If we review some footage, and this is something we do quite a lot at school with the shorter formats of the game, are we maximising every dot ball? So if we just simply look at all the dot balls we face, are there any opportunities where we can turn zeros into ones? Can we turn ones into twos? Are we missing out on any deliveries? So even though we might not be able to take exactly the same approach to the game that international players are taking, I'm sure that there is still big room for improvement and the opportunity to squeeze more out of every innings that we go into.
Yeah, I like that idea of just having the intention to say, okay, well, you know, we might not be able to blaze everything over a perfect outfield, but if you can put the ball into the gap, if you can pick up a single, we were talking about the ball hitting the pads or the miss hit big shot, those kind of areas where naturally the striker might say no, but actually, if you look at it again on the footage, and I've been doing that in the last couple of games, there are moments where it's, if both batsmen went, they'd easily make it, even though the ball's only dribbled a couple of yards away. So those kind of things, you can work on those kind of things as well, can't you? I mean, you can set up middle practice and have guys working on running between the wickets and improve those areas and push those scores up beyond 200. Instead of saying 200, that's a good score today.
If you go around the country, you do see that in different leagues, there's almost an accepted cap on what you will score. And if you score over 200, or if you score over 250, or if you score over 150, or whatever it may be, you know you've got a good score and you know that you're generally in control of the game. But I think these kind of assumptions are probably just accepted and not challenged as much as they should be. And we should be challenging them. That's what England are doing at the moment. They're challenging what they're doing, and it looks like it's having a positive effect. And I know you're challenging what you're doing at your club, and I'm sure Gareth challenges every day what his boys are doing, and that's what we want to do. Can we challenge ourselves and challenge people around ourselves to try and break from what is the tradition or the assumption of what is a good score or a bad score?
We set the challenge this weekend just gone of a Super 600. For the three teams, 200 for each team, which was a good idea from our third 11 captain, and then the second team ruined it by scoring 337.
Quality
spoiled the whole thing for everybody.
Spoiled the whole game, didn't they?
Well, interestingly on that, I think it's a great idea, that, mate, because then it gets everybody together working towards one goal, irrespective of the side that you're playing in. And years ago at a cricket club that I played in that was particularly thirsty, it had to be said, if all four teams won on a Saturday, when everybody would go back to the home clubhouse, or our clubhouse, and for an hour after the last person got back to the clubhouse, it was free drinks. And it was absolutely brilliant, and it really brought everybody together. But you'd be surprised how much more detailed people were about their cricket when there were free Thatcher's Gold cider, other ciders are available, kicking around at the end of a very successful weekend for that particular cricket club, which was charred for all those charred fans that are listening.
That's but that's a great way to do it. If you can not only say you need four victories, but also say you need all 44 people in a room together at the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Because that's as big a part of the success as the performances on the pitch, is getting everyone back socializing together and spending some time together, which is often more of an obstacle than actually winning matches.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. So I've got the questions, let's fire away. First question. Flaws are good because they motivate change.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Success comes from blooding youngsters.
No.
Yes.
Third question. It's a great idea to field without a wicketkeeper sometimes.
Yes.
No.
Spot the wicketkeeper. In this section of the show, we reach into the mailbag and dig out a couple of questions that are answered by the team. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can email your questions to us using the email address coach@pitchvision.com. And that is what our good friend Bonga has done. Welcome back to the show, Bonga. And Bonga says, our cricket season in South Africa ended a couple of months ago. I've never had a good season as I only got one wicket in the second part of the season, even though I didn't get smashed in any of the games. I only bowled my full quota of overs once. My coach normally complains of me bowling too short when I try to bowl back of a length, being a seam bowler. What can I do during the off-season to get more wickets in the upcoming season?
Well, I think one of the challenges for you, by the sound of things here, Bonga, is that you're bowling a lot of balls which are missing the stumps, and most of that being based on length. And it's very similar to a conversation that I had, and I'll be brutally honest, I never really got through to this particular player, but we had a conversation as a coaching group, and I brought up some stats and some information to support that conversation with Andrew Flintoff. He was obviously a fantastic bowler, amazing cricketer, but actually used to have to bowl so many deliveries in test match cricket to get wickets, because he generally bowled balls that missed the stumps. And batters over the time that I was there had worked it out after the 2005 Ashes, that the more balls that you could let go through to the keeper, the longer it would take him to get a wicket, and therefore you'd tire him out and somebody else would have to come on to bowl. So they sat on him, effectively, rather than playing him. And he never really adjusted his length, except for when we went into subcontinent conditions, where he shifted his lengths. And what our argument was that on wickets such as South Africa and England and New Zealand and Australia, that by pitching the ball up more, maybe would increase his runs per over, but more importantly, would reduce his average and make his strike rate better. But it was something that he never got across in test match cricket, and it would be something that conversation, and therefore the practice that would happen after that conversation, I would be having with you as well if I was coaching you. And again, really, practice is really important around that, putting down some targets, registering and monitoring how many times you're hitting the stumps. Something like pitch vision that you may not have available to you is obviously the best way of doing that. But even having some notational analysis on a bit of paper at the end of your run-up after you've bowled each ball with a tick or a cross will give you some sort of idea of how many more times you're bringing the stumps into play rather than bouncing the ball over the top or outside or off stump. Now, interestingly, with Andrew Flintoff, Andrew was brilliant at bowling in one day cricket, and his strike rate in one day cricket was absolutely immense, because obviously he looked to hit the stumps more often, and he never quite transferred that across into test match cricket, and it was a test match bowling that ultimately brought his career to an end slightly earlier than we all would have wanted.
That is a classic piece of coaching, isn't it? Hit the stumps more. You can't get much clearer than that, can you, Lavis?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to bring up the phrase of methods of dismissal, and how many methods of dismissal do you feel like you're creating if you're bowling your back of a length area, and as soon as you pitch up a little bit more, how many are you introducing there? And obviously, as soon as that happens, your bold and LBW figures are gonna change, and you're giving yourself an opportunity, which you're obviously not really giving yourself an opportunity if you're bowling back of a length. But also, no doubt, you're going to bring the keeper into play more and the slips into play more, because suddenly people are playing at balls that they're maybe not sure if they should be playing or they shouldn't be. There's potential for a little bit more swing through the air. There's less reaction for the batter to see the ball off the pitch. So as soon as that shift's made, then methods of dismissal is going to be something that changes massively. It may be that at the moment you bowl back of length because you don't have that movement through the air, and you don't feel that when you pitch up you threaten. So maybe throughout the off season in the winter, it's worth considering having a look at what the ball does as it comes out of your hand, and seeing if there's any way of adjusting to create a little bit of swing to give you that extra confidence to pitch up a little bit more. Because no doubt if you did swing the ball big, you'd be a little bit more confident in doing that. So maybe have a little look at that, how the ball's coming out, what position the seam's in. Is it scrambling or is it straight? What direction is it pointing? And maybe tinkering a little bit with that and working out how you can create a little bit of movement through the air, which will then allow you those opportunities to introduce different methods of dismissal.
I mean, going back to my initial stuff on Fred, I've just got his stats up, which are quite interesting. But his strike rate in test match cricket is 66 balls. So he used to have to bowl 11 overs per wicket, which for somebody of his quality, because he was one of the best bowlers that I ever had the pleasure to mitt to and to keep wicket to in practice, you know, is high, isn't it? You know, it's a high number of balls, and it took its toll on his body. And that's why ultimately he played 79 tests rather than heck of a lot more. In one day cricket, he struck at 33, you know, which is a massive change. And I know the game's different, and I know that he was bowling at times where probably the stumps had to come into play a little bit more. But equally, it would have been interesting to see him challenge himself a bit more in test cricket. And we tried to get him to do it, but he was resistant, unfortunately. But there could be a message in there for you, Bonga, and your practice over the course of a close season.
I think feels help here as well. If you've got an understanding captain, if you're a bowler who likes to bowl back of a length because you know you're not going to get driven, then protecting the drive a little bit more. And there's nothing wrong with having an extra cover in there just to protect the drive a little bit more and give you the confidence to push the ball a bit further up, because you might find that actually you're not getting driven as much as you think you will when you're bowling that little bit full of a length. So that could help as well.
Definitely. I think split fields as well, to bring stumps into play. You know, it's very difficult, isn't it, to bowl to... I see a load of kids bowling to 7-2 offside fields, and it annoys the heck out of me, I'll be brutally honest, because it just means that you're going to adjust your line to four stump and outside, which is such a shame when, as Sam says, most of the dismissals are taken, come off the line of the stumps, whether it be LBW bowled or even courts. You know, you get a hell of a lot of courts which are hit off the line of a stump. So 7-2 fields I'm not a big fan of. Go 6-3, and if you're not swinging it heaps and you're not causing any problems there, go 5-4 and bowl at the middle of inside and off, and get your wickets that way.
Next question's from Kaushik, and Kaushik says, "How can I improve my back foot game? I'm always reluctant to get on the back foot because of fear of getting out LBW."
I think we had a similar question about improving back foot game on that as a general thing about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Gareth gave a really good answer of just improving your confidence in your ability to execute skills, and talked about how you can first of all go and identify a couple of shots that you might want to have on the back foot, and very simply reverse chain them from whatever starting point you'd like, whether it's just a nice simple underarm feed up towards a pull shot or a throw down or whatever you'd like, all the way up to as close to a match situation as you can, and just try and develop a little bit of confidence or a little bit of belief in your ability to play those shots. And as soon as you've got that confidence and belief in yourself, then actually executing them and putting them into your plan as a cricketer is going to be something that's going to be of big benefit to you. Obviously, it seems like you're aware of the opportunities you're missing out on in sort of being limited on that back foot. And it's great that you're looking to expand your game and introduce something. So I would very simply target one shot or two shots, whether it's, even if to begin with, it's a defensive option just to get you back there and just to get you comfortable being in position. But get you playing a defensive shot and hopefully an attacking shot as well off the back foot, and just get, make it something that's a confident part of your game, even in a drill scenario to start with before you take it into the nets. Gradually work out how you can apply it to your game.
The things that I'd add to that is that most of the best players on the back foot around the world are guys that get into middle and off, or get their right eye if they're a right-handed batter, or left eye for a left-handed batter, covering the line of middle and off stump. And that gives them a fantastic position to access both sides of the field in terms of scoring options. Because they can hit through the offside, they can pick up balls from outside off stump and hit through mid-wicket with a pull shot, they can clip off of their hip. And so that's where most people lie. Now, there are some batters that don't do that, and one of the most infuriating batters that England played against during my time with them was Virender Sehwag, and Virender would very much be batting off of leg stump and midland leg. And as a result, an off-stump back of a length ball was a cut shot to him. So, you know, it's not one cap fits all, but most of the best players play from middle and off or off-stump off the back foot rather than the Sehwag way. So maybe give both a go and see which one works for you. But Sehwag wasn't the best back foot onside player. He was a magnificent back foot offside player. So you might want to think about that. And then really, in terms of adapting, because obviously sometimes wickets play differently or people bowl differently. If the ball is darting back in and you feel that you're going to get LBW a lot as a result of playing off the back foot, then you might want to adjust your foot patterning and practice adjusting your foot patterning so you go more into leg stump. And this was something that England did particularly well after they'd suffered at the hands of people like Waqar Yunus and Wasim Akram and Nintini and people like this that were bringing the ball back in from outside off stump of a right-hander by actually exposing their stumps a little bit and playing back on the line of leg stump and playing forward so they're using their bat rather than their pad. But that was very circumstantial, very taken into account the conditions and also the bowler type that they were facing. As I say, the general rule is to get into middle and off, or get your right eye as a right-hander or left eye as a left-hander over off stump. That would be my starting point, but always factor in the fact of considerations for wicket and what the ball's doing and also what the bowler's intentions are.
And one of the themes that we often bring up on the show is being confident enough to experiment with a few different things and seeing what happens. And you know, it's okay to have a session where you try something and then discard it because you feel like, okay, well, that wasn't for me.
Completely right. You've got two options. Give them a go and you'll find out which one works for you.
I want to talk about something that's confusing me slightly about the way that club cricketers behave, and that is to do with the difference between having a net and doing fielding drills. What I've found over running a few sessions over the course of this season with a lot of people, 15, 20 people, and I'm the coach on my own, is that if you give the players a bunch of equipment, you know, cricket bat, some cones, some balls, a stump, all to do with fielding basically, then they'll go away and happily do as much fielding as you ask them to do, as long as you want them to do it, and they'll cover off all skills and make up their own drills and come up with some amazing stuff. But when you ask them to have a net, everything completely falls apart unless you run it as a very, very tight ship. So the lesson I've learned this week is always keep your eye on the batsmen and the bowlers in the nets and let the fielders get on with it themselves. And that is the end of the show for this week. A couple of things we need to do before we leave. The first of which is decide on the winner of this week's prize, if you remember. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And the two questions were Bonga's trouble with not getting enough wickets and Kaushik's question about his back foot game. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I know Bonga's got about 700 courses, but I love the question. And a little bit like last week, I think we nailed it as an answer, which is always a sign of a good question. So, Bonga, congratulations. You might even end up getting mine if you've gone through all of the other ones, mate.
Congratulations, Bonga. And if anyone's listening to the show and they want to be a little bit more like Bonga, send in the question and win a prize or many prizes. Gareth, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also use social media to get in touch with us. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can do that pretty easily. Just go to your favourite podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and tap on that subscribe button. It'll automatically come down to you every week without you having to do any more, and then you can listen away. And if you want to get the show notes, or you want to stream the show online, or you want to use the good old-fashioned RSS feed, then go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. And while you're over there, you can look at all the articles and videos and all other fun stuff we got to do with playing and coaching better cricket. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.